Public Goods versus Private Greed, A History of the Shared Commons. This is April 2017, and I am Roger Clary, and they are going to podcast this today, so if you're listening, this is created under the Creative Commons 4.0 license. Okay. Another 20 minutes I have to share with you. First, a disclaimer. I taught economics, the dismal science, for several years at the college level. Sorry to say I never covered the commons. We were all caught up with, quote, free market capitalism, supply and demand, gross aggregate demand, etc. But times have changed. First, part one, private greed. It ain't good. Remember Enron, the crony capitalist venture? The California energy market, successful at delivering value to abusers. Enron's $63.4 billion in assets made it the largest corporate bankruptcy in U.S. history until WorldCom's bankruptcy the next year. Greed hurts lots of people. Lost retirement, lost jobs, including the governor of California. The demise of Anderson Accounting. Stock owners and the people of California lost billions of bucks. Maybe that's too far away, so remember September 15th, 2008, Lehman Brothers Holdings Incorporated, $691,063,000,000 down the drain. The financial system is still on life support with virtually free money to the banksters. The abuse is still going on. The derivative market is a good example. In finance, a derivative is a contract that derives its value from the performance of an underlying entity. This underlying entity can be an asset, an index, or an interest rate. It is called the underlying. Using an analogy, the dice are the underlying in a craps game. The Economist has reported that as of June 2011, the over-the-counter derivatives market amounted to approximately $700 trillion, and the size of the market traded on exchanges totaled an additional $83 trillion. That's with a T, right? For perspective, the budget for the total expenditures of the United States government during 2012 was only $3.5 trillion, only. Currently, the derivatives market is $1.2 quadrillion. The world's annual gross domestic product is about $73 trillion. That means the bets on this market are 15 times as much as the whole world produces in 1 year. Now, one type of derivative is called the credit default swap, for which the inherent risk is considered high. Warren Buffett referred to credit default swaps in his famous 2002 speech, in which he warned against, quote, financial weapons of mass destruction. Currently, the credit default swap market is $6.8 trillion. Yet, we failed to regulate and control this market. What little regulation we had is currently evaporating. So check out the news and find out what kind of regulations they're taking away. The next bailout of Wall Street and the banks must be the last. You probably have your own story of monopoly big business. Comcast. This call is not really important to us, so we don't hire enough people to answer the phones. Okay, that's enough of that. Part two. Is there an alternative to this market-driven capitalism? Yes. One alternative for many things is the commons. You might think of the commons as in Commonwealth. Commonwealth is a designation used for four of the 50 United States in their full official names. The Commonwealth of Kentucky, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and the Commonwealth of Virginia. Like all states, everyone shares in their common wealth, especially schools, roads, parks, rivers, and lakes. The commons is an old value that's resurfacing as a fresh approach to 21st century crises, such as escalating economic inequality, looming ecological disruption, and social alienation. In essence, the commons means everything that belongs to all of us, and the many ways we work together to use these assets to build a better society. This encompasses fresh air, clean water, our legal system, scientific knowledge, biodiversity, language, artistic traditions, fashion styles, cuisines, self-government, and much more. Taken together, it represents a vast inheritance bequeathed equally to every human, and one that, if used wisely, will provide for future generations. The commons is what makes life good. Drive your car on the, quote, public roads. Ride your bicycle on the greenway. Every time I ride my bicycle on the South Trail, I cross a wonderful steel and concrete bridge. You may have seen me on Facebook. Thanks again to all the people of Rutherford County for building this bridge for me. There is no toll, and I am willing to share this $300,000+ bridge with you. Public goods are a commons recognized by the U.S. Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7 of the United States Constitution, known as the Postal Clause or Postal Powers, empowers Congress to establish post offices and post roads. Communications and transportation is important to everybody, then and now. The English Commons, where people could gather wood and herbs and stuff, gave rise to the Magna Carta. When the kings decided people couldn't go to the woods anymore because they, quote, owned them, people kind of revolted, and so we ended up with many revisions that eventually became the Magna Carta. And this also started the end of the divine right of kings, eventually leading to democracy and the internet. Just kidding, just half kidding on the last one. Now, please don't confuse commons with communism. We will see why. The commons are generally run by informal rules, free of price tags, foster thriving cultures, and engage people to produce non-monetary benefits, happiness, fellowship, beauty, etc., sometimes helped out by governments. Some public goods. Example, a lighthouse. The classical definition of a public good is one that is non-excludable and non-rivalrous. The classic example of a public good is a lighthouse. A lighthouse is non-excludable because it is not possible to exclude some ships from enjoying the benefits of the lighthouse. For example, you could exclude ships that haven't paid toward the lighthouse, but that's really hard to do, while at the same time providing the benefits to other ships. And it's non-rivalrous because if the lighthouse benefits are already being provided to some ships, it costs nothing for additional ships to enjoy the benefits as well. This is not like a rivalrous good, where the provision of a greater amount of the good to someone requires that either more goods be produced or else someone else gets less. There's a very real opportunity cost to providing more goods to some people sometimes. Roads fit this non-rivalrous most of the time. Except at rush hour on Interstate 24. Too many cars reduce the benefits to you as you wait in traffic. The road becomes a rivalrous good in many ways. Some other examples of public goods: radio and television. No one today who broadcasts radio or TV programs over the air excludes anyone from receiving the broadcast, and the cost of the broadcast is unaffected by the number of people who actually tune in and receive it. So it is non-rivalrous. Clean air and air and pollution abatement, the quality of the air we breathe is, in particular neighborhood, is both non-excludable and non-rivalrous. Pollution abatement is therefore a public good, a commons. Examples of the water level in a lake and mosquito abatement program make it clear that the essential characteristic of a public good is that it is not possible to vary the level of a good, the quality or quantity, etc., between different people. You can buy any car you want, or at least any car you can afford. That's a private good, but you still have to share the roads with everybody. A highway system, mass transit, a school system, in each of these examples, everyone who has access to the system benefits or suffers from the same system. The system's characteristics, for example, the quality of teaching in the schools, or the time it takes the subway to travel from Oak Park, Illinois to Chicago, or the number of potholes in the street, these are the same for all users. An additional example of public goods that are subject to congestion are a bridge, especially the one in Louisville, a public swimming pool, and an airport. The characteristics of a home are a commons for the people who live there. The size of the TV set, the color of the living room, the size of the swimming pool. Well, you do have a pool, don't you? And the temperature of the pool's water, the size of the refrigerator, the speed of the internet connection. These are all common goods to the residents of the home. Whatever is chosen for one is chosen for all. The thermostat setting in a room, the temperature in this room, or in a shared office or home. It's the same temperature for all who occupy the room. We can't make it warm for some and cool for others. Police protection and national defense. National defense can't be provided at different levels to different citizens. See, they could give Democrats less and give Republicans more, but we can't do that. It's not the way it goes. Similarly for the level of police protection in the community, but police protection, unlike national defense, is subject to congestion. A larger population requires a larger police force to provide the same level of protection. Books. Consider the information in a book. After the information has been produced, once the book has been written, it needn't be written again in order for additional people to read it. So in this respect, a book is non-rivalrous. But until recently, there was still significant cost to making the book available to additional readers. Additional copies of a book had to be printed, bound, and delivered, etc. All these steps required resources, a cost, for each additional copy of the book. So the public good character of a book, the non-rivalness, information content, was outweighed by its private character, the cost of producing each additional copy of the physical book. But this has changed. Today it is possible, once a book has been written, to distribute unlimited copies electronically at essentially zero marginal cost. So today, a book can be a public good, like TV broadcasting. It is technologically a public good, but to the extent that exclusion is possible, in practice, a book may or may not actually really be a public good. The information content, everything we said in the preceding paragraph about books, is equally true for recorded music, movies, newspapers, and magazines, for what today is often called the content. In the not very distant past, it was costly to manufacture and distribute additional copies of any particular content, such as a CD, videotape, or magazine. Do they still make videotapes? I don't think so. Anyway, but today, once the fixed cost of creating the content has been covered, the additional cost of making that content information available to additional people is essentially zero. The following is from a book called Think Like a Commoner by David Bollier. I think that's the first one up here. Yes. Think Like a Commoner. That's a wonderful little book. And this is just quoted from him verbatim, so I'm not taking credit. Consider the improbable circumstance that gave rise to one of the most successful, widely used software programs in the history of the commons, known as GNU, or GNU Linux. Linux Torvalds was a 21-year-old undergraduate in Finland in 1991 when he decided to write his own computer operating system. It was a ridiculously ambitious project because operating systems are horrendously sprawling and complicated, things that only large corporations can afford to create and distribute. But Torvalds was fed up with the cost and complexity of Unix, a leading mainframe program. So he set out to build a Unix-like operating system that would work on his personal computer. As luck had it, the internet was just coming into vogue as a popular medium for email and file transfers, the World Wide Web, the click and point, had not yet been invented. Torvalds released an early version of his program to an online group, and within a few months, hundreds of people and volunteered useful suggestions and bits of code. Within a few years, a collaborative community of several hundred hackers, positive hackers, had come together to work on the new program. He called it Linux, a wordplay that combined Unix with his first name, Linus. Several years later, when the so-called Linux kernel was combined with a suite of programs known as GNU, developed by Richard Stallman. He's an interesting character. You check him on the web. He looks like a hippie, but he actually was a professor at MIT. He's the founder of the Free Software Foundation. A complete operating system that could work on a personal computer was born. GNU Linux, often simply known as Linux. The GNU comes from G for the GNU. It's kind of recursive. And N for not Unix. It was an astonishing and unexpected achievement. It not only demonstrated that amateurs could create a highly complex software program, it also showed that the internet was a highly productive hosting infrastructure for social collaboration. A virtual community of self-selecting hackers with no payroll, no corporate structure, had organized themselves into a fiercely creative, innovative, merit-driven commons. Remarkably, it worked. And I thank David Bollier and that book for that. Check out the TED Talks for Torvalds. He's an interesting, fun person. Now, I myself use OpenOffice, a free open source software product for word processing, spreadsheets, database, etc. My wife uses paint.net to process photos. And every once in a while, we give them a few bucks to help things along. What are you going to do? Now, this talk, if it gets to a podcast, is covered under the copyleft protection of the Creative Commons Fair Use License. You can use it, but you have to give me credit. You can't sell it. It's another free commonwealth. Now, in 1968, a biologist named Garrett Harding in Science magazine wrote about, quote, the tragedy of the commons. He wrote that people who share land in commons will inevitably degrade it. Not true, but it was accepted as true. Suppose a chunk of land can sustain 1,000 sheep. 10 ranchers agree that each will graze 100 sheep. No problem, but some will say, I will add another sheep or two or three, no one will notice. But soon the commons is ruined because of overgrazing. Be thankful that most people are not that greedy. Harding had somehow missed the fact that Swiss farmers have been sharing common pastures since 1517. Irrigation canals in northern New Mexico are a commons-based water system that started when Spain controlled that area. Which brings us to Eleanor Ostrom. And that's in the second book here. Well, I'm coming to that. Never heard. Oh, all this is from J. Walt Jasper's book, All That We Share, A Field Guide to the Commons. Never heard of Eleanor Ostrom? You need to know about her 2009 Nobel Prize in Economics. She was an Indiana University professor of political science who went into the field and actually studied what happens with a commons. She had 8 principles for managing a commons. The commons is much more than stuff. 1, define clear group boundaries. Who's in, who's out? What's in, what's out? 2, match the rules governing the use of the commons to local needs and conditions. 3, ensure that those affected by the rules can participate in modifying the rules. 4, make sure that rule-making rights of the community are respected by outside authorities. That one really hurts the Indians because they think of everything that they own as sort of in common. Then the government comes in and says, there's oil here, get away, or we want to build a pipeline. They don't respect the Indians at all. Develop a system carried out by community members for monitoring members' behaviors. Use a graduated sanctions for rule violators. 7, provide accessible, low-cost means for dispute resolution. And 8, build responsibility for governing the commons in nested tiers from the lowest level to the entire interconnected system. Now think about the way we do city streets, county roads, and then federal highways and interstates. Every commons may not use all the rules, but it can still be a commons. Queue up for a line, even at McDonald's, and see what happens when someone cuts in line. There are rules. Bicycles must yield to pedestrians on the greenway. Pass on the left. Signal when passing. Problems that commons encounter, and that is enclosure. Enclosure is the taking of the commons rights, usually by government, and selling or giving it away to private persons or corporation. Land mining, oil drilling rights, grabbing water and air without paying the real price. If this isn't bad enough, the other side of the coin is that businesses externalize costs. Example, mountaintop removal for coal. Grab the land, steal the coal, pollute the rivers and groundwater with toxic poison chemicals. A fine toxic dust settles downwind on farms and homes. Maybe the paint on your car gets ruined. But businesses get water, oil, gas, minerals, trees, grazing land at a fraction of their true value. In effect, business is stealing from you and you don't even know it. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said, "The first sign of tyranny is government's complicity in privatizing the commons for private gain." And I like that so much I'm going to repeat it. The first sign of tyranny is government's complicity in privatizing the commons for private gain. You can probably think of lots of things we share. Some will disagree on some. Higher education has shifted from a commons to a privatization of debt. States used to pay for most public higher education in 1963. Can you remember that long ago? I paid $128 a semester for tuition, health care, ball games, and yearbooks. The state of Illinois picked up most of the tab. Now we have a privatization of education in the form of student debt. Healthcare for people over 65 is mostly a commons with Medicare. We old people prepaid some of the cost and now pay some more, and then we share the savings by going as a group. People, this includes me, think healthcare is a right. We in the United States spend more per person on healthcare than any other country, while some people are still left out and some don't get the care they need. Maybe healthcare should be a commons like Canada. In the United States, 65% of personal bankruptcies are caused by medical debt. So you build up your little retirement, and then you get sick, and they take it all away, and you're left with nothing. We're doing pretty well. Now for the big close here, big close. There is one commons I know that we share, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Murfreesboro. We all share the benefits, the community, the songs, the piano player, the speakers that shares the coffee, the donuts. To keep this going, we, that's me and you, have to take responsibility. Pay up with your time, your talents, and your cash, as much as you are able. The more you give, the better it gets for all of us. I know that you do want to share. To make the UUFM Commons a success, everybody needs to carry the load. Turn in your pledge card, stewardship form, volunteer. The Commons is a self-organizing social system for the long-term stewardship of resources, shared values, and community identity. Let's build ours. That's it. Thank you.